his most straightforward stories. A wealthy man tears down his barns to build bigger ones. He congratulates himself, pats himself on the shoulder. He's ready to coast into retirement. And then, just like that, he dies. God calls him a fool. Jesus repeats that part. He is a fool, not because he is rich, but because he is not rich towards God. So the question for us today is, what does it mean to be rich in or toward God? We live in a world of more. More storage space, more retirement accounts, more for me, and maybe I'll share a little bit if there's something left over. We cannot drive down the interstate, down the highway, without seeing billboards for self-storage units. Between Bear Lake, out to Buckley, up to Maple City, there are no less than 19 storage unit businesses. That does not count Traverse City. That's just from Bear Lake out to Buckley over to Maple City. Millions of square feet rented just to hold what doesn't fit in your house. Can't scroll through your phone without being told and sold the idea that your life is not full unless you have more. We live in an economy that thrives on scarcity. We live in an economy that is convincing us that what we have will never be enough. Our culture thrives on the myth of scarcity. It tells us that there will never be enough. Not enough time, not enough love, not enough resources. So we buy more. We save more. We protect more. But God's economy, God's way, is not built on scarcity. It's built on grace. Where we see want, God provides manna. Where we fear, God invites trust. Where we wall ourselves in our barns and grain bins, God breaks open the walls with radical generosity. If we were to have an open-minded reading of this text, it insists that our concern is not just personal piety, but public justice. Where are the barns being built today that cost the poor? Where do policies and profits get more attention than people? Where does the church need to stand, not with the one strong storing grain, but with those going hungry outside of the barn? This story is not just about barns and bank accounts. It's about orientation. It's about values. It's about how we define security. And Jesus is inviting us to live differently. So did you notice the way, and if you were reading along, did you hear, did you see the way the man speaks in the parable? He does not consult anyone. The rich fool in Jesus' story is deeply, deeply alone. His inner monologue has no mention of community, no mention of friends, neighbors, workers to build the barn, or family to help. He doesn't even speak about God. He talks only to himself. What should I do? I will do this. I will store. I will say to my soul. Depending on the version that you're reading, you can have up to 15 mentions of oneself in that reading. And it's only 7 verses long. As my grandmother used to say when we were little growing up, there's an awful lot of me, myself, and I going on in that story. That is the loneliness of greed. God's dream is not a world of silos, but a world of community of tables. To be rich towards God is to live in relationship, to trust that we belong to each other, to believe that the well-being of my neighbor is bound up in my own well-being. What should I do? I have no place to store my crops. I say to my soul, that is the language of isolation, It's the language of ego, of self-sufficiency disguised as wisdom. There is no wisdom in storing up goods for a future that you might not live to see, especially when your neighbor can't make it through the day. This man's wealth isolates him. He becomes enclosed in his own abundance. Remember, God does not build silos. God builds communities, communities with tables to welcome all in. Being rich toward God means being open, being connected, being generous. It means refusing to define our lives by what we control and instead letting our lives flow outward and forward with love. We are a church that believes in a still speaking God. So what does this parable mean for us? Individually, collectively, the church, the body of Christ. What if Jesus is not just warning this one person, but warning all of us? What if this parable is a challenge to the systems that we participate in? This parable calls us as the church to examine our own barns, not just the physical ones, but the theological ones and the ideological ones and the institutional ones. Have we built systems of exclusion to protect our own comfort? Have we prioritized survival over solidarity? If we are truly rich towards God, then we must become a church that tears down the barns of supremacy, silence, and self-interest. We must become a church that redistributes grace and makes room at the table for everyone. In God's economy, enough is always enough. In God's kingdom, there is no hoarding while others go hungry. In God's realm, blessing is not measured in square footage, but in compassion, mercy, and justice. To be rich towards God is to live with open hands. To be rich towards God is to believe that if one of us is suffering, then none of us are safe. To be rich towards God is to trust that love multiplies in the giving. The more we give, the more there is. We are living in a time of massive inequality, where billionaires make sure that they do not see the unhoused, where food deserts still persist while millions of tons of food are wasted every year. And that's not just waste off our tables, that is like literally farms being plowed under because there's nobody to pick it, harvest it, to take it, and the food goes to waste while people are hungry. Where churches, and yes, even the most progressive ones, sometimes cling to their own barns. We cling to our endowments, we cling to our buildings, we cling to our nostalgia, and we stay in our own comfort zones. Jesus is calling us to be the people who tear down those barns, not one of recklessness, but out of love, to open ourselves up, to imagine abundance not as something to protect, but something to share. We are called to be the church that reflects the abundance of God's grace, feeding the hungry not because we pity them, but because we are them. Opening our doors not to preserve a tradition, but to embody transformation. Using our resources, our time, our money, and our space, not to extend our legacy, but to extend God's love. And I'm going to go back to last Monday. This church knocked that out of the park in doing that, in opening up our resources, our time, our money, and our space to extend God's love. But the challenge that I hear in my own head is how do we do that more than once a year? Granted, once a year is really fantastic, and it was a lot of work, and a lot of us went home absolutely exhausted that night. But what does it look like to do that more than once a year? So what does it look like to have a rich life looking towards God? It might look like this. like a retired teacher who mentors kids after school, or better yet, opening up our space for more tutors to come in. It looks like a congregation that opens its building to be a shelter, even when it means more wear and tear on the carpet. It looks like choosing less for ourselves so that others can have enough. It looks like trusting that we hold not only our savings accounts, but the grace of God. So there's a story of a woman, I'll call her Ellen in this story, who lived simply her entire life. She worked really, really hard, and she gave every place where she could give with her time, her resources, her capacities, and she never had any much extra nothings, right? And when she passed, people expected her estate to be fairly small. But what they found out was a will full of blessings. Every dollar she had saved was going to the causes that she cared about. Housing, hunger, education, to the church that she loved so much. Her life had not been flashy, but it had been faithful. Ellen did not need to build a bigger barn. She built longer tables. She wasn't rich by the world's standards, but she was rich towards God. Now, I want you to know that in this parable, if you go back and read this again, which I encourage you to do, Jesus does not say, don't save anything. He does not condemn the wise planning. Jesus is not saying that wealth is evil. It's not. He's saying that wealth is a tool. And what matters is how we use that. Time, talent, or treasure, those wealthy things. Jesus warns against building a life around fear and isolation. We can use wealth to wall ourselves in and live in a world of scarcity, or we can use our wealth to break down those walls and live in abundance. Jesus offers us instead a different kind of security than those barn walls, the richness of God's justice and joy. So perhaps today we hear not just a warning, but an invitation to live rich towards God, to embrace generosity as freedom, to build not barns, but community, to treasure what truly matters, love, justice, relationships, and grace. Soul, take joy, not because you have stored up wealth, but because you are already enough in the eyes of God. So may we all be rich towards God. May we live generously, and may our barns become places of blessings, not barriers. May that be the kind of wealth that we seek, and may it be the legacy that we leave behind.